Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode of Locked On 49ers is brought to you by Built Bar. Remember, with promo code Locked On, you get $10 off your first box of Built Bars at BuiltBar.com. Brian Peacock, your host on this Thursday edition. We're continuing our AFC East look ahead at the 2020 season opponents, and it's the Buffalo Bills to finish up the crossover week here. Before we get to Joe Marino, who's the host of Locked On Bills, he's got some insight not only to the team in Buffalo, but to the 49ers draft, because he is also a draft dude, as was Kyle Krabs from yesterday's show, who also hosts Locked On Dolphins, and they are co-hosts together of the Draft Dudes podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. But we've got to hear from Nick Bosa first. He had some words about the loss of DeForest Buckner in the middle of the 49ers defensive line, his scouting report on his new defensive tackle playing right next to him in Javon Kinlaw, and what Bosa is doing to get ready for the 2020 season. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review this podcast, tell a friend about Locked On 49ers, let them know their team is covered right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. And you can find me on Twitter at BD Peacock, and we'll probably get back to some more Twitter questions here at some point very soon. I've got a backlog of emails as well to get to after we're done with these crossovers for the next couple of weeks. But Nick Bosa, he met with reporters virtually Wednesday and talked about a number of things, but I think it's not as easy as just plugging in another talented player in the spot of DeForest Buckner. And Bosa talks about how important Buckner was to that 49ers defense, not only as his talent on the field, but his leadership and even some calls he made on the field.
Yeah, Buck was definitely one of my best friends on the team, and seeing him go is obviously bittersweet. He's obviously got a pretty good contract and he deserves it, but just losing him as a leader, we're going to have to really figure out how to step up and fill that void, because he was the third down D-line play caller. He was the hype speech guy. He was everything. And I think he played with the best effort on the D-line, which really shows on tape when you see somebody that big sprinting to the ball every play and making those tackles downfield. And obviously his pass rush ability, we're going to have to step up. We have, obviously, Javon coming in, and I'm sure he'll be a huge help. But me, D, Eric, Solly, DJ, we're all going to have to step it up for him. Buckner, he was just always, like, we would turn to him on third down for the, like, our third down game calls that Coach Chris would point and tell us that we're running something, and we would walk up to Buck and be like, "What you got, Buck? What do you want?" And if Chris didn't specifically say something that we wanted, then Buckner would just decide. So it was pretty big. I mean, that's a pretty big responsibility that we're going to have to pick up.
And yeah, DeForest Buckner was a captain. It's not surprising that it's going to be difficult to replace him as a human being in the 49ers locker room as well as on the field. But I didn't know about the third down calls and calling some of those stunts and games that Bosa was talking about that they run as pass rushers on third downs. So, and hey, he came into the league as prepared to be an NFL player as anybody. He was literally showing guys like Solomon Thomas some hand technique on the sideline during games, and you don't see a rookie doing that with a veteran very often, or really ever. I can't remember ever seeing that, to be honest. So now maybe even a bigger leadership role for Nick Bosa in year two, and can even take another step as a player. It sounds like he thinks he can.
We still have plenty of leadership on the team, I think. But for the guys like me and Debo and Dre, who rookies that played a lot, and I think it's time for us to. Well, we're not just deers in headlights anymore. We know the routine. We know how an NFL season works, and now we could really just take the next step and just work on honing our game and really studying our opponents. Now that we know, now that we've played them once, I mean, my expectations are always high. And I set my goals really high, and I've been achieving them. So I'm just going to keep setting them high. And, I mean, just keep working my butt off. And I know the work that I'm putting in now is going to show up. And I think I'm going to be a much smarter player next year. And I'm just going to know how to approach my opponents much better. And I'm not going to waste rushes. I'm not going to make silly mistakes that I made last year, and hopefully enhance my game.
You know, in talking about Debo and Dre Greenlaw and some other young players on the roster, you know, year three guys even, and as we know from seeing guys like Dante Pettis, the development path isn't always linear for players, and you think they're going to take where they went from week 16 and be that much better in week one the following year. It's this, you know, linear upward path of growth as a player, and there's going to be peaks and valleys and plateaus in player development, so it's going to be very interesting to see how those year two and year three players come back and are ready to compete for the 2020 squad. And I have a feeling Nick Bosa is going to become one of those leaders for sure for the 49ers and really take a lot on his shoulders with that defensive line. And there's some other really good players there, obviously, to go with them, and some smart guys in D Ford and Eric Armstead. So, you know, it's only one rookie that's added to that group. Bosa had an interesting answer, and I guess he has to get out early before the park rangers so he doesn't get kicked out of the parks when he's trying to work out in the mornings. Very interesting in this environment how players are staying ready and staying in shape and staying strong, because there's no team activities happening right now, aside from some virtual meetings.
Yeah, I'm back home in Fort Lauderdale. We run at a park near our house, and then we lift at our gym out in Weston that my dad owns. So we wake up at 6 in the morning. We get to the field by 7. We finish running by 8:30, try and get off before the park rangers show up. And we grab breakfast and head to the gym. Get our lifts usually end by around 2. So it's a pretty full day for us. And we hired a chef, and she's great. We have a good food delivery system, so we're keeping the nutrition really good. And obviously, we're not able to get out too much, so honestly, my body is feeling unbelievable at this point.
And how about the scouting report on Javon Kinlaw? What does Bosa think of the rookie first rounder for the 49ers that he's going to be playing next to in 2020 and beyond?
I didn't watch too much of South Carolina until obviously I started hearing that he might be a pick for us. And then I started to watch some of him, and he just embodies what we do as a D-line, just the way he plays the run. He's just a beast. He plays the run like we play it. He gets off the ball really fast, and he's just a giant human, perfect to replace Buckner. And I'm really excited. He seems like a good dude, and I've been talking to him a little bit, so I can't wait.
It's funny, you hear him talk about DeForest Buckner, you get a little bit sad, missing number 99 in the middle of that defense, and then you hear him talk about some other young leaders that might be stepping up for the 49ers, and what he expects of himself, and what he's doing to get ready for the season, and then hearing about him talk about how good of a fit Javon Kinlaw is going to be, excited about the young player jumping in there. And it's like, okay, you got to move on, man. You got to move on in this league. It's going to happen. And you replace talent with talent, and it's go time. And so it gets you excited, right? It gets you reinvigorated to think about that aspect of the 49ers and how they can still improve, and seeing some development of some young players really on both sides of the ball. And they're a pretty young football team overall. I mean, you know, there's some key veterans around, and they replace some veterans with others, like Trent Williams coming in, but it's not just, you know, year one, year two guys, it's year three and four guys too, that could all get better collectively, including the veteran quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo. I have another couple of clips from another, speaking of veteran additions, Travis Benjamin. Haven't talked about him a lot. He's been a little bit of a forgotten man, and in addition to that wide receiver group, and it sounds like he's ready to compete. We'll hear from him momentarily, and of course bring on Joe Marino Locked On Bills, talk Buffalo Bills football team, one of the 49ers opponents coming up in 2020, and get his opinions on the 49ers draft. This episode is brought to you in part by Built Bar. Built Bars are tasty and Built Bars are healthy. If you're looking for that energy, you need a snack. This is ideal, the ideal snack for me, because it tastes good, but it's not heavy. It's not going to get stuck in your teeth. You can power one down and go do whatever you need to do. If it's work, if it's a workout, high in protein, low in sugar. That I can't stress this enough. Low in sugar. It's not dessert. It's actually good for you. But it tastes so good. It's like, how is there only 110 calories, 4 grams of sugar in this thing? This morning, trying to get some podcasts going, didn't have breakfast, so I went with the Mint Brownie Delight, which was fantastic. Only 110 calories, 15 grams of protein, and only 4 grams of sugar. So low calorie, low sugar, low carb, but high in protein, high in fiber, exactly what you need in a snack. And the best part is if you go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your first order. Use promo code Locked On. That's one word, Locked On, for $10 off, and build your own box at BuiltBar.com. Benjamin met with reporters and was asked the question, and it's a great question right now with teams not being able to practice. I mean, it's one thing to be able to throw weights around and maybe even work out by yourself and do some running and maybe stay in some sort of shape and stay strong. But what about the timing? The passing games seem like they might be suffering the most right now. He had an interesting answer on what he might be looking to do with the 49ers and trying to get a crew together and build some of that timing, get together with his quarterbacks and some of his other new receiver mates in San Francisco.
No plans yet because it's still early in it. Eventually, I say about another 2 weeks or so, everyone will get together and figure out something to throw some balls and get that well-down timing together.
Benjamin had a lot of good things to say about Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers team and why he wanted to sign with the 49ers, but it's a one-year contract, and the 49ers just added two more rookies to the wide receiver room. It sounds like that doesn't bother Travis Benjamin, and he's ready to come in and compete for a role, whether it be on special teams or on offense.
Yeah, absolutely. Before I even got off the phone, we know on both sides that I was coming in and compete. Nothing is given. Everything is earned, and that receiver room, each and every player knows that. The first day we met, Wes told everybody that since we got another guys, we got a first-round pick, we got a couple guys coming in, this room is going to compete, and that's what made the receiver room so much better, that everyone's know they compete and everyone's helping each other out.
All right, let's get this crossover rolling and bring on today's guest. Joe Marino joining me here, the host of Locked On Bills, also the co-host of Draft Dudes, along with my guest yesterday, Kyle Krabs. And along with Kyle, does fantastic work. Joe, first of all, I got to say the work you guys did during the draft, the help you guys gave us on Locked On NFL and the mock draft stuff was so fun. What you guys are doing over there at the Draft Network is really cool. And really, you're breaking ground. You're doing it better year around than anybody has yet covering the draft.
Man, I really appreciate those kind words, and we're grateful that we've been a great resource for this network and hopefully the football community as a whole in terms of the features and content we're able to provide. So we're having a lot of fun and really anxious to see what year three at the Draft Network brings.
How many mock drafts did you do last year, and do you expect to beat that number this year?
Well, I published, I think, 9. So every 5 weeks starting like September, I put out a mock draft, but the amount of simulations I did, there's a lot.
Do you know how many simulations were done on the mock draft machine?
Oh, total? Oh man. A lot of millions. I'll say that a lot of millions.
Is there anything you're able to get from that data about the draft? And because that's fascinating to me to see how, and does that play into the rankings you had there, the projected rankings that you had on the mock machine?
No, we pretty much use our own sources to develop the predictive big board there. But we do try to pay attention to different trends. And if there's certain players that are just kind of always the fallback options, we try to move things around, mess with the algorithm, try to give everyone a fresh experience every time, because let's face it, the draft is unpredictable. And so we want to try to give as much variance if you can in terms of giving new experiences, but also a realistic experience, which I think we do a pretty good job of.
Yeah, and looking at the Bills draft, I'm sure people would have been super mad at you guys if you would have allowed AJ Epenesa to fall late in the second round to the Bills pick, you know, outside of the top 50 in the mock draft machine.
Yeah, it's a good pick for the Bills. They definitely made a big emphasis this offseason on really fortifying the defensive line. And I know they lost Shaq Lawson and Jordan Phillips, but they were able to bring in Mario Addison and Quentin Jefferson, Vernon Butler. They drafted Ed Oliver in the first round last year. And then, of course, AJ Epenesa, this second-round pick that they have. Just a lot of versatility with the defensive linemen. The Bills now have a lot of complementary skill sets. You've got speed guys in Jerry Hughes and Ed Oliver. You've got length and power guys and Quentin Jefferson and AJ Epenesa. You've got your run pluggers in a Star Latulele, versatile guys like Vernon Butler. So this is the deepest defensive line I've seen Sean McDermott had since he became the head coach in 2017. And this was the position they attacked this year. Last year, they really invested heavily on the offensive line and really took that unit to another tier. And I think that'll happen next year for this Bills defensive line, given the resources they committed to it.
Backing up a little bit to the first round pick that the Bills traded away for Stephon Diggs, we talked a little bit about this for your show on Locked On Bills, and as well, I've talked about this a lot with Matt Williamson at Locked On NFL. On Wednesday's show, we covered the AFC East draft, and to me, it was a no-brainer. You're trading, and you look at what the Minnesota Vikings did with pick 22, drafting Justin Jefferson in the first round. I'll take Stephon Diggs, who at his, you know, for Jefferson's ceiling to be someone as good as Diggs, you'd be ecstatic. And as long as you have the cap room, I got to feel like Bills fans should be pretty happy to come out of the draft in the first round with Stephon Diggs versus one of those second tier wide receivers and throw in a dart there at that position that doesn't have a very good hit rate in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly the question that Brandon Bean asked himself is, you know, where this football team's at. We still got a quarterback on a rookie deal. Our defense is set. Our offense made big strides last year. We feel like we're in a position where we can make a run here. And do you want to take that big need that you had, that number one receiver that you felt like you needed to add to this football team, and invested on pick 22 in a rookie? And he said, no, let's get Stephon Diggs, who's 26 years old and on quite a team-friendly deal over the next four seasons based on, you know, what other top receivers are getting paid. And so they got to do everything guy for Josh Allen. You know, Stephon Diggs is a good route runner. He wins vertical. He's good at the catch point. In contested situations, he competes after the catch and creates for himself. I mean, that's the do-everything guy that this offense needed. And so credit to Brandon and Bean for acknowledging the value proposition of hedging your bet on a rookie when you mentioned the hit rate, especially in the first round, has been pretty poor, or go out and get the known commodity while you have the cap space and see what type of run you can muster up here by knowing you have that proven guy. And I think one thing that Brandon Bean's done a good job of in general with the offense that he's built around Josh Allen, maybe not in year one because they had so much dead cap space, but you think about Josh Allen last year and going into this year, he didn't surround him with developing players. And I think that's really good for Josh Allen, who was a pretty raw quarterback coming out of Wyoming that needed a lot of work. Well, he didn't surround him with a bunch of young talent that was unproven in the league. Now, there's been some younger pieces added in, but for the most part, the infrastructure has been a lot of veterans. And that was really a really smart move by Brandon Bean to not put Josh Allen in a situation where he's developing around developing players and really isolate that variable and give him a chance to really reach his ceiling.
Yeah. And Josh Allen, by the way, has a lot of fans over here in California. He grew up and played high school football in a town not very far from where I grew up. I believe it's Firebaugh, California is where Josh Allen, I'm from Visalia, California, which is not too far away. Both are pretty close to Fresno for your listeners who might not know what the heck I'm talking about in Central California. But it's pretty clear that the Bills made a focus at the wide receiver position, not only getting the veteran in Stephon Diggs, but still double dipping in the draft too. Gabriel Davis and Isaiah Hodgins. What do you know about those guys? Can they make an impact early, do you think, for the Bills, or are those guys sort of down the road, sort of developmental wide receivers?
Well, I think in Gabriel Davis and Isaiah Hodgins, the Bills went out and got some size for the room. You know, even Stephon Diggs, he's not necessarily your big height guy, big catch radius guy. Now, he does a good job of extending his catch radius and going above the rim and catching the football. But, you know, John Brown, Cole Beasley, Stephon Diggs is your top three guys. I mean, Isaiah McKenzie, your number four last year. I mean, there's just not much height there at all. And so this was an opportunity for the Bills to add more complementary skill sets, some more versatility to this this wide receiver core and get a guy that has this, the catch radius and size of an Isaiah Hodgins and Gabe Davis. You know, got Gabe Davis for his size. He's really a good vertical receiver that runs good routes down the field, that gives Josh Allen a target, knows how to get loose on the secondary. And then Isaiah Hodgins, more of a bigger slot type receiver that can uncover quickly a very deceptive route runner with terrific hands. And so you add more diversity and more complementary skill sets to your arsenal of weapons. And when you have a top three like Brown, Diggs, and Beasley, feels like that's a good opportunity to get some more niche type players to round out your weaponry and really give yourself a chance to attack the whole field in the passing game.
More with Joe Marino coming up. I want to pick your brain, Joe, on this 49ers haul, specifically those first rounders. Guys and gals, start the competition today with people important in your mom's life. Mother's Day is her Super Bowl, so celebrate this Mother's Day by scoring her favorite gift of the day. Your mom will be able to travel in her mind to exotic India, sample the food, and laugh at the perils of raising a teenager in 1950s India through a new book of fiction called The Henna Artist. By the way, it's Reese Witherspoon's book club's pick for May. Then anytime in May, post a picture of your Mother's Day recipient holding the ebook or book on Instagram or Facebook and tag the author at The Alka Joshi. A donation of 4 meals per post up to 10,000 meals will go to Feeding America. So guys and gals, buy The Henna Artist today at your favorite bookseller, including Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Walmart, Costco, and Target, and make mom the ultimate winner in your family. A few more Bills notes here, Joe, before we get to the 49ers. And Jake Fromm is a fascinating selection at quarterback in round 5. I think a fantastic value to draft him that late. And who knows, maybe he only carries a clipboard in the NFL. But he's so different than Josh Allen. Do you think there was a mindset of the coaching staff and the front office thinking, let's get a boring backup quarterback that does boring, correct things in practice and boring reps that Josh Allen can watch and be like, okay, that's probably the right thing. Maybe I should do more of that.
You know, that, and that's kind of what they had is in Matt Barkley as their backup quarterback, who I know they like a ton. They extended his contract. In terms of the game planning component of having a veteran on the roster to go with Josh Allen, you know, game day, having that ear on the sideline, that's a, you know, a guy in uniform and not just a coach. Matt Barkley means a lot to Josh Allen, but you still get nervous if Josh goes in and Matt Barkley has to play just because he has his own limitations. And it feels like in Jake Fromm, they maybe got Matt Barkley 2.0, that after this year, when Matt Barkley's contract is up, they can move on from him and have Fromm ready to embrace that similar type of style and backup role. You know, I don't know that Fromm has a very high ceiling as a starter. I mean, as a fifth round pick, I think that says a lot in a quarterback driven league. And he has his own limitations in terms of arm talent and mobility. But like you said, they're a very boring, cerebral, unheralded type player that, you know, you can look at him in 10 years and maybe he'll have a career like Chase Daniel or Case Keenum, something along those lines. And, you know, as the Bills have added talent, significant talent over the years, well, it's time to start paying that talent. And so the Bills are going to have to start getting a little bit more creative with how they pay depth so that way they can keep their key stars. And this could be an example of where you're looking for a value proposition here after this season at backup quarterback. The challenge is, will Brandon Bean carry 3 quarterbacks? Other than that, I don't know what his course to the roster is, because I don't think that they're going to move on from Barkley.
Yeah, and it looks like you got to carry some extra wide receivers this year potentially, unless there's some difficult cuts there. And then I got to ask about the running back position when the 49ers and Bills do line up in 2020, and we'll find out later Thursday exactly what week that will be. Is it going to be Zach Moss? Is it going to be Devin Singletary? Because just on the surface, looking at those two running backs, I'm having a difficult time thinking, okay, this is the first down back, this is the third down back. How do you see those two working together in that backfield?
Well, I think this is example of the philosophy that Sean McDermott has for his backfield. He wants to have two backs that really share the load. And if you look across the time that he's been in Buffalo, even when LeSean McCoy was there, RB2 for the Bills was a 150 plus touch a year position. And so I think they liked what Devin Singletary showed last year. Obviously he took away a lot of that workload from Frank Gore as the season went along. And I think this is a situation where Devin's going to be your 60% guy. Zach Moss will be your 40% guy. And they're neither one of them are overly explosive back, but they win differently. They both have good vision and contact balance, but Singletary's a lot more elusive, a lot more wiggle to him. He gets out of tight spaces, and Moss is very much a downhill back that can really, you know, stick his face in the guys and challenge them to make business decisions. But both good in pass pro, both catch the football well, so you still have, you know, everything at your disposal when they're in the game. But stylistically, I think it's that elusiveness from Singletary, the power from Moss, and they'll combine to have a 60-40 market share, in my view, this season.
Since I'm talking to a draft dude, I've got to ask you this question before I let you go here, Joe, and I appreciate the time, and it's fun to do these crossovers and get some perspective on some teams that we don't talk about a lot here. So it's fun to watch the Buffalo Bills, and I hope the Bills isn't one of those games that they put at the beginning of the schedule that can be easily lopped off. And I've heard some people say that, you know, some of these games might be the ones that are at the beginning of the schedule so they can get rid of them easier. And I'm thinking, man, put those division games early in the schedule. And because I don't want to have an 8-game schedule and then play two of those games against each division opponent at the end of the season. So I'm hoping that the Bills and some teams like that we don't get to see a lot are games that stick on the schedule, and hopefully all the games stick on the schedule. But I want to ask you about the 49ers draft and your thoughts there. I had your colleague Kyle Krabs on yesterday of Locked On Dolphins, and he had some coded words about and some kind things to say about the 49ers draft. I'm pretty sure he wasn't completely sold on the Javon Kinlaw pick. How'd you feel about the haul of the 49ers taking Kinlaw at 14, then trading back up for Brandon Ayuk in round one?
Yeah, you know, I think Kyle and I see Kinlaw differently. I'm a lot higher on Kinlaw, and I do admit that you won't watch his tape and see a dominant football player on every single rep, but my goodness, when he does dial it in, he does special things, and he's got a really rare physical profile, a lot of size, a lot of power, a lot of quickness, a lot of agility, and he's got the traits that you're looking for to be a disruptive interior presence and, you know, replace a lot of what they lost in DeForest Buckner, and obviously with a much cheaper player. So, you know, playing the economic component of this situation quite well, in my view. So I think he does need to find some consistency. You wish he was more dominant on every snap, but his peaks are worth the risk, in my view. And so as a penetration style player in a 4-3 defense, I think he's everything you could want, especially when you look at those high level plays and you think about the physical package here. I think he's going to be an impact guy. I think this is the right type of situation for him to really find his ceiling. We talk about Brandon Ayuk. He does two things that really well that are very valuable in the NFL. He creates after the catch, and he can get down the field and win vertical. And so when you talk about big playability, the ability to create offense for yourself, you know, that's extremely valuable, especially in an offense like this. So I think this is another example of the 49ers finding the right type of scheme fit to maximize their potential. Now, Brandon Ayuk, if I had any worries about him, is he's not very good at beating press coverage. So you're going to need to create him some runways, play him in the slot, put him in motion. But you get the ball in this guy's hands, he's pretty dangerous. And so he's going to have to develop. He's going to have to learn to run routes a little bit more effectively at the NFL level and really deal with physicality at a different degree. But big playability is there for Brandon Ayuk in the style of offense that we see the 49ers play. A yak guy like this, in addition to Deebo Samuel, you know, you've got a lot of dangerous firepower in those two guys when they get the ball in their hands. I think the key for this all coming together is a guy like a Jalen Hurd or a Kendrick Bourne or maybe even a late round guy that they got, Juwan Jennings, really solidifying some of those outside reps so that way you can get Ayuk and Samuel free to really do what they do in the slot, move them around and create those spacing problems for defenses that Kyle Shanahan does such a good job of manipulating.
Yeah, it seems like every year people expect the 49ers to draft more of an outside style wide receiver, and nobody runs more motion. You mentioned the motion there. Nobody does more motion than Kyle Shanahan, and essentially everybody at some point is going to have to line up in the slot. So if it looks like the 49ers have a lot of slot receivers, it's because everyone has to eventually be in the slot. So you've got your inside slots, your outside slots, your big slots, your small slots, and that's essentially what the 49ers wide receiver group is starting to look like. Were you surprised the 49ers did pass on Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb there? And were you surprised to hear that Kyle Shanahan say that it was either 1A or 1B, or he had Ayuk as his number one overall wide receiver completely just ahead of CeeDee Lamb?
You know, I think what I'm most surprised, if anything, is that we didn't see more significant trade backs. I mean, they moved back one spot with the Bucks, which was pretty inconsequential for a fourth round pick. But, you know, they moved up for Brandon Ayuk. And I thought both of those positions, defensive tackle, wide receiver, were really deep in this class. And you kind of looked at this 49ers draft, and I think it was basically they went from 31 to 153. They were scheduled to not make a pick. I thought they would do a little bit more moving back, take advantage of the depth of the class, and get some more depth for this football team where, you know, salary cap situation is not necessarily great. You've got some guys you're going to need to pay here coming up, and where you could really replenish this team with some young players that can fill meaningful roles and really strengthen your depth. But I don't think you can argue with them really getting two good scheme fits that can fill those roles. But when you see guys like Ross Blacklock going in the second round, Justin Matabuik, the defensive tackle from Texas A&M, falling to the third round, you got all these great receivers sliding. I mean, Denzel Mims is what, wide receiver 13 off the board? You know, you felt like maybe there was more of a chance to trade back, but you can't really argue with getting two meaningful players at those positions and really sticking to these are the guys we want. We don't want to pass on the guys that we really feel can be the difference makers.
And I can't wait to see who John Lynch gets to trade up just one spot with him next year. That's becoming one of my favorite draft trends now, for John Lynch getting a team to just trade up one spot with them, and so they can get back and get the exact player they were still going to take at their original slot. That is Joe Marino. He is the host of Locked On Bills. You can also catch the Draft Dudes podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network and all of his work at the Draft Network. Joe, really appreciate the time, man. It's great talking with you.
Yeah, thanks, Brian.